TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Welcome in, Raised by Wolves, Danny Cunningham, Manny Hill, coming to you on Monday, November 25th. The Minnesota Timberwolves are sitting at 8-8 so far, and they're in the playoff picture still, Manny, and that's something that I didn't think that we would necessarily be saying about a team that's 500 at any point in the year, but the Western Conference certainly doesn't look the way that really anyone expected the Western Conference to look. So this leads me to the question that I kind of have for today's podcast is, how many wins is it going to take, and who are we comfortable saying is not a playoff team for sure in the Western Conference so far? That's kind of where I want to go with today's show, because yeah. I think that the best way to put this is kind of in tiers or bubbles or groups or whatever you want to do, and the Wolves are kind of in that group. Well, somebody has to be the 7 and the 8 seed. Could it be them?
Yeah, I mean, they've done a nice job of at least staying afloat with, you know, all the injuries and guys getting sick and everything that they've had to deal with, and we'll certainly get to that in a little bit too. But yeah, I think they've just done a nice job of sort of staying afloat, and then you look at the standings below them and there's a couple of teams there that we just did not think would be, we didn't think that they would get off to this bad of a start. And you do have to wonder at some point, when do we start to write those teams off? Because yes, it is very early into the season. We're only, you know, 16, 17 games for the most part for a lot of these teams into the season. Still a lot of basketball left to be played. But eventually, you got to have this conversation of all these teams that are below the Wolves, when do we start writing them off and not really including them in the conversation for the postseason? And where will the Wolves fit into that conversation too?
So I'm very comfortable writing off the Golden State Warriors. I don't think you are going to object. I don't think anyone in America is going to object with what that team has turned into from the NBA's dominant franchise of this decade, essentially, to now they are 3-14.
Yeah, I don't think a team that's 3-14 and has lost 9 of their last 10 games is going to be sniffing the postseason.
Yeah, probably not this year, maybe next year. The other two teams I'm willing to write off so far are Memphis and OKC. And those are the two teams that we looked at the beginning of the year and said, okay, you know what, those two teams are in the early stages of a rebuild. They're not going to be playoff teams. Now,
right.
They're both 5-10, which is for maybe a little bit better than expected, and OKC's kind of an unlucky 5-10 of the teams outside of the playoff picture. They actually have the best point differential. They're only getting outscored by less than a point per game, but they're still 5-10. And I can't see them getting it together and being a playoff team. I don't think that's in the cards. And Memphis is, they're a young team. They've got some nice young talent. John Morant's really fun to watch, but they're just not a playoff team right now. And I think that both of those teams have pieces that they're going to end up trading away in hopes of obtaining future assets. So I think that those are two other teams that are fair to write off, and you're really not going to get an argument, right?
Right. I mean, I think with Oklahoma City, as soon as they made that trade to send Russell Westbrook to Houston for Chris Paul, I think we pretty much wrote them out of any sort of playoff conversation at the start of the year anyway. And Memphis, I don't think either one of us had that and had them even sniffing a playoff spot. And so, I mean, they have young talent, but they are still a couple of years away, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly what they are, and that's fine.
Yep.
So then that really the Warriors, and the way I wrote about this for ScoreNorth.com, the Warriors are in the bubble where everything that could possibly go wrong has gone wrong. Right, Klay Thompson gets hurt in the finals, Kevin Durant leaves, Draymond Green's battling injuries, Steph Curry breaks his hand, D'Angelo Russell hurts his thumb. Actually, every single thing that could go wrong for the Warriors has gone wrong, so that's why they're in their own tier. And then Memphis and OKC are in a separate tier that say, you know what, there weren't high expectations. But then you get to the next one where it's San Antonio's been disappointing.
Yeah.
Portland's been really disappointing. The Pelicans are in a weird spot because the Zion injury and Drew Holiday's been banged up, and they really haven't had their full team too often, and they got off to a really slow start. But Portland, I'm uneasy about writing off because I've seen what they've done throughout January and February over the last couple of years, where it just feels like that time of year when basketball gets a little mundane and stuff like that, they just don't lose games. They're always the hottest team in the NBA in January and February. I feel like that's just it's a certainty of life, it feels.
Yeah, with Portland, though, I wonder. I agree with you. Like, I think we're going to see a point where they do get hot again and they start to play well and rack off, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 games in a row, 7 wins in a row maybe. But I wonder with where they're at right now at 5-12, and they've lost four in a row. I wonder if that time in January where they usually get hot, when that time comes around, how far back are they going to be? Like, are they going to be able to make up some ground through the month of December a little bit just to sort of keep themselves in the conversation? Or are they going to, or if this sort of tailspin that we've seen them on so far is going to continue into December, and then by the time January rolls around, it's not really going to matter how many, you know, how long their winning streak may be, because they're just going to be so far out of it. It'll be really interesting to see how that plays out for them.
And that's my concern too, because as we record this, and I know that the Wolves play tonight in Atlanta, but the Wolves are 8-8. They're in the eighth seed, tied with Phoenix. Portland's already 3.5 games behind those two teams. Now, that might not sound like a ton of ground, but that's also something. It doesn't look like they're going to close anytime soon. Damian Lillard's been banged up. The Zach Collins injury really hurts them, but Carmelo Anthony's not going to be the savior there. They just lost to Cleveland this past weekend. They're not a good basketball team right now, and there's really no other way to put it. So I do think that by the time they hit that hot streak, which will inevitably come, I'm starting to feel like they're going to be a team that maybe has put themselves too far out of the conversation now, and when they do have to try and make up for it, it just might be too little too late.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm looking at their next couple of games right now. So they're at Chicago tonight, and then they host Oklahoma City on Wednesday, and then they host Chicago on Friday. I mean, I think if you're Portland and you're going to try and keep yourself into this conversation, I think these next three games are ones that you just got to have, right? I mean, because you're gonna be at the Clippers on Tuesday the 3rd, then you're home against Sacramento. That's not going to be easy, and then you're hosting the Lakers. And I mean, these next three games, I think if you're Portland, you got to have them. I think just to keep yourself in the conversation, and even then, you win these next three games, you're still 8-12. You're still four games under 500. You still probably have some ground to make up.
Yeah, that's putting it lightly. Having ground to make up, it's just. I don't know that they have the pieces to be able to do it this year. And part of that is Yusuf Nurkic, sorry, is still out with that broken leg.
Yeah.
And they don't know when he's going to be back. Zach Collins with the shoulder injury really hurts them. They just don't have the same pieces that they had last year. It's a very different team. I mean, Al-Farouq Aminu and Mo Harkless aren't guys that are terrific NBA players. But they kept them afloat at some times last year, and losing those guys this past offseason, and even Jake Layman, who's here in Minnesota. If they had Jake Layman now, I would like their chances a little bit better, just because he's an NBA wing, and that's where they really struggle at this point. So I'm not quite ready to write Portland off, but I'm really, really close.
How much do you think Carmelo can help them?
He can give them some scoring on the wing.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's willing to actually play the four now is something that does help. But it's still going to take time. I mean, in his first couple of games, he's looked okay, especially for not playing a basketball game in over a year.
Yeah.
But it's Carmelo Anthony in year 17.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you're getting Carmelo Anthony from 2009. You're getting Carmelo Anthony at 36 years old, or however, 35 or 36, whatever age he is right now. It's unfair to expect him to come in and be someone that can really flip the switch and write your season. You can't ask that of Carmelo at this point.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. I'm looking at some of these other teams too. You know, San Antonio. You mentioned San Antonio at 6-11 now, and they won their last game. But I wonder with the Spurs, and we touched on this a little bit last week. I wonder if the Spurs' playing style is kind of catching up to them now, because they're not a team that shoots a lot of threes. You've got LaMarcus Aldridge, you've got DeMar DeRozan, two all-star caliber players, but they're not three-point shooters. And I just wonder if their style of play is just not really going to allow them to maintain in this. And it's crazy to think about, because you never think about the Spurs missing the playoffs, ever. You never even have that conversation. But now it's like, here we are. We're kind of wondering if this is going to be a year where they end up falling short.
Yeah, it's a very... After seeing them in person at Target Center last week, they looked nothing close to a playoff team. And it's not even the offense that's... I mean, that yes, that is an issue.
Yeah.
But defensively, they're terrible. They're 26th in the league in defense right now.
Also unheard of.
That's the reason why they're struggling. Yeah, also unheard of. Exactly. I mean, they scored 132 points in a game and lost. Has that ever happened to a Greg Popovich coach team? Ever? 132 points in a regulation game against Washington and lost.
Pop has to be pulling all his hair
defend.
Out. Yeah, Pop has to be pulling all his hair out. I mean, because that guy, that's been the staple of the Spurs for certainly as long as he has been there, which is over two decades. They have always been one of the best defensive teams in the league. And to see them just not even be in the top half of the league in that category has got to be driving him crazy.
And the reason why I don't want to quite write them off is because the offense has been fine. They're actually in – they are fifth in the NBA in offensive rating right now. They're a good offensive team, but they can't defend anybody. And I don't know if that's going to change or not. I would like to think that Greg Popovich will be able to figure something out and they'll get better on that end of the floor. Because, yeah, they're going to lose the math battle most nights, but they're efficient enough to where it doesn't matter.
Sure.
But the fact that they can't defend is what really just destroys them. That's why they're 6-11.
Yeah, it's just amazing to think that a team that has two all-stars, LaMarcus Aldridge, DeMar DeRozan, could end up not making the playoffs. And it's not like those guys have been injured. They've played every game for them so far this year. It's just crazy to think about, man. It's just really crazy to think about. But I think for that very reason, because they have those two guys, it does kind of make me hesitant to completely write them off. But right now,
exactly.
It's 6-11. Oof, it'll be a hell of a coaching job from Pop if he can get them turned around and they somehow find themselves in the postseason.
And it's crazy. They started off 3-0 and then ended up losing 8 of their next 11. They had that 8-game losing streak. That's just what... And that's, again, unheard of in the Greg Popovich era, which has essentially spanned my entire lifetime. I haven't ever seen this team like this for the most part. That's why it's so jarring to see. I'm not ready to quite write them off. They're in that same bubble as Portland where they, as an organization, have just built up far too much equity for me to say on before the calendar even flips to December, no, they're not a playoff team. They just have too much equity. But when they were at Target Center, they looked far from a playoff team. They looked nothing like a playoff team. And maybe when they come back, and whenever that second visit is, I forget when they come to Target Center again, it'll be different. Maybe. But right now, it does not look good for them.
Yeah, 100% agree. All right, New Orleans is another team I'm interested in because we have not seen them at full strength. Zion Williamson has not played. And I'm wondering with them at 6-11 as well, if they're going to be able to sort of stay afloat in all of this before. Because when is Zion expected to... Or at least when is the target time for him to be back with them? Do we know yet?
So they haven't said anything publicly about his recovery timeline. And I talked to someone in the organization a couple weeks ago, and he essentially had no further update for me. But what was initially said was 6 to 8 weeks. And I do forget what day they're in Minnesota. But the 8-week mark is like 3 days before they play the Wolves.
Okay.
So he could be back. I want to say it's December 18th or somewhere along those lines is when he could be back. So it is starting to be soon. And they've just said everything's going well for the most part, but they've kind of been tight-lipped about it. And we'll see. But Zion's supposed to be really good. But we don't know that Zion's really good. And it's a lot to ask of anyone, whether you're the number one overall pick or Carmelo Anthony. To come in and say, hey, you have to try and uplift us from this horrible start we got ourselves off to and find us into the playoff picture. For a 20-year-old kid, that's a tough ask.
Yeah.
Now, it could happen, but it's a tough ask.
Yeah, no, it totally is. And you also have to just factor in, okay, this is going to be his first legit NBA action, whenever it is that he comes back. And he is 20 years old. We don't know exactly how he is going to look just coming off of this injury, let alone just how he's going to look in his first real NBA game action. So I think to expect him to sort of come in and be a lightning rod to, you know, I'm not saying it's impossible that it, you know, that it won't happen, but it is, like you said, it's going to be a lot to ask for him to just come in, even if he's, you know, let's say coming off a suspension or something like that where he was just healthy and just not playing, but he's also coming off an injury now too in this particular case. So it'll be interesting to see how they sort of fit him into the rotation now and how much he's going to play early on. it's going to be fascinating to see. And also, in these next few games before he does come back, you know, can New Orleans keep themselves in the conversation? They've lost two in a row now. They're 6-11. If they're 7, 8, 9 games under 500 by the time he gets back, then it's hard to really imagine that he'll have a huge impact in getting them back into the playoff conversation.
It certainly is. It's an interesting thing to think about because he could be the X factor and they could really click, and they've got some fun pieces. I mean, Brandon Ingram has been one of the most improved players in the
league
so far. He, after not getting an early contract extension this past summer, which I think was the right move by the Pelicans to not give, especially coming off of that the blood clot that he had in his shoulder that ended it last season. He looks like he's earning a max contract. He looks like the guy that everyone thought he was going to be when he was picked number 2 overall. He looks really, really good.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's going to be enough. And they're another team. They need to get better defensively because the Pelicans have really not been able to stop anybody. We talked about the Spurs is the reason they haven't been winning is because they're 26th in defense. The Pelicans are 28th. That's why they're not winning too.
Yeah, and it's amazing to think about, too, when you consider, you know, a guy like Jrue Holiday is one of the best defenders in the league. And, you know, but I think it's a lot to ask even for one guy to just sort of be your all-world defensive guy if nobody else on the floor can really step up on that end of the floor, too. So, yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see how things sort of play out for them. Sacramento is the other team, too, I think, in this tier. They're just a half game behind the Wolves in the standings at 7-8, and they are starting to play a lot better after a putrid, what were they, 0-5?
Yeah, they started off 0-5, and the really fascinating part about all this is they've turned this around. No Marvin Bagley, who I believe he was hurt the first night of the season. He only played in the first game, and De'Aaron Fox sprained his ankle and is going to miss a month. I mean, he's about halfway through that now. But is going to miss a month of action. And they've turned it around without two of their three best players. That's what's been fascinating to me. And that's why I think that they are the team. If there's a team that's going to threaten Phoenix and Minnesota for the 7-8 spots in the playoffs, I think Sacramento is the best bet right now. Sacramento really looks like a team that once they get those two back, if they continue to play this level of basketball, they're going to be really tough to beat.
Yeah, and, you know, to their credit, I mean, a guy like Buddy Hield has picked up the slack. I mean, Buddy had a really good year last year, and he got paid, and good for him. But, you know, and Harrison Barnes has contributed nicely for them, too. I mean, the nice thing for them is that, you know, some of the moves that they've made in the offseason have sort of allowed them to sort of stay afloat. I mean, getting Harrison Barnes, I think, has turned out to really help them because you lose De'Aaron Fox and you lose Marvin Bagley, two guys that are supposed to be sort of the cornerstones of what you're trying to do long term, and then you have a veteran guy like Harrison Barnes step in and pick up some of the slack in their absence. That's been big for them. I've been impressed. I thought when they started out 0-5, they usually don't like to let, you know, leave teams off the list of, you know, if they can stay in it or not so early like that. But I thought with them getting off to that bad start and just how bad they looked that first game of the year, I think, against Phoenix, where the Suns just ran them out of the gym, I thought, okay, maybe this is a Kings team that's maybe another year away, but now they've gotten themselves right back into it. It's been interesting to see.
Yeah, and I have really been impressed that they were able to turn around because I'd picked them to get the 8 seed. Prior to the season, when I did all my predictions, I picked my two bold predictions were the Kings getting the 8 seed and the Golden State Warriors missing the playoffs. One of them looks smarter than I thought it could ever look because I thought it'd be close with Golden State missing the playoffs.
Yeah.
I thought they were not going to be a playoff team. I didn't think that they'd be a candidate to pick number 1 overall necessarily, but I didn't think they were going to be a playoff team. And I picked Sacramento to make the playoffs. So it's like, well, one of those looks good. One of them certainly doesn't. But I do think Sacramento is good enough to go on a run and be a playoff team.
Yeah, and they certainly look like it. I mean, they've done what they needed to do as after getting off to that bad start. They've won 7 of their last 10 now, and they're just a half game out of it. So they've done a great job of getting themselves back into it, whereas you do have to look at some of the other teams behind them, and you have to wonder if they're going to be able to pick up some of the slack. And I think you never want to count out San Antonio, and you never want to count out Portland. But right now, Sacramento looks like a team that is going to be a force to be reckoned with, at least trying to get one of those last playoff spots. Do you think Phoenix is going to keep this up? We've kind of talked about this already.
That's what I was going to ask you, because I'm not entirely sure. What I do like about Phoenix is I think Ricky Rubio and Aaron Baines, when they've been healthy, and both of them have missed some time recently with a couple of different injuries, they've looked really good. And those two have, so the best way I can put this, I think, is everything Phoenix did this offseason in a vacuum, I don't know how much I liked it. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, they signed Ricky Rubio to a contract. I don't know that I like that contract. Oh, they traded for Aaron Baines. Like, he's fine, I guess, but it's Aaron Baines. Like, they put together a bunch of moves that you're like, well, I guess it's whatever. But as a whole, it looks really good because they essentially upgraded the roster around Devin Booker from guys like Dragan Bender, who just don't belong in the NBA, to guys like Aaron Baines and Ricky Rubio, who are, without question, NBA players. And that's the biggest difference in this team, is that their bench is now filled with NBA players, and it had not been the case. That's why they've been winning 24 games for the last 5 years, basically, because they've had teams that just aren't filled with NBA players. Now they've got guys that belong, and that's the biggest difference. That's why they're at 500 right now. That's why they've looked like a playoff team. That, and they've played pretty good defense, too.
Yeah, and remember our old buddy Dario Saric, too, is there.
He's another one. He is an NBA player without question.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've been impressed. I wonder, though, with them and watching them a little bit at Target Center on Saturday, I wonder if – I mean, Devin Booker, by far and away, easily is their best player. But I wonder who that second guy is going to be, because right now it kind of seems like Kelly Oubre is sort of like their de facto – second player, but I don't know if Kelly Oubre is good enough to be the second player on a team that goes to the playoffs. You know, that's why I'm kind of wondering.
A team that goes to the playoffs, yes, right now. Now, a team that is a competitor, no. Like, mm-hmm. Let's not get this twisted. The Wolves are not a team that's competing to go to the finals this year. The Suns are not a team that's competing to go to the finals this year.
Right.
None of the teams that we are talking about on this podcast today are teams that are finals contenders right now. But I do think that Kelly Oubre is good enough to be a number two on a playoff team at this point. He's been good for them so far.
Yeah.
I was impressed with what he was able to do at Target Center, and I've been impressed with him throughout the games that I've watched of Phoenix so far this year. I like Kelly Oubre as a player, and that trade they made sending Trevor Ariza to Washington for Kelly Oubre when Ariza was going to walk for nothing, it looks brilliant right now. That looks like the move. That looks like the best move the Suns have made.
It does, and he has been really, really good for them. I just wonder if this is going to keep up, though, for them, you know, long-term, for this season, in terms of, are they going to be able to keep this up and be able to find themselves in the postseason with a team like the Wolves hanging around, obviously, and then Sacramento sort of ascending after their rough start, you know?
Yeah, and then that brings us to the Wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Who do we think the Wolves are through eight games? Because that's the question I keep trying to figure out, and I don't know that I have a really good answer to it yet, Manny. I mean, they're a team that is probably better defensively than I thought they would be. They run the system the way I thought they would run it, but, man, they can't shoot. They cannot shoot.
Yeah, shooting has been a problem, and I applaud them for sticking to it, that we're going to shoot threes, because this is the style of play that we're going to play, and that long-term, this is what we want to do. I get it, and I understand it, but I just wonder if this is going to be the right formula for this team to get to the postseason right now with its current collection of personnel. And, you know, we're going to see how it plays out. But, you know, and also, too, I mean, they've been dealing with some injuries and – you know, guys getting sick and guys missing time for personal reasons, obviously, which, you know, they have no control over, and you understand that and everything. But yeah, it is really fascinating to see them at this point, despite not really shooting very well and having guys sort of missed multiple games and things like that, and find themselves at 8-8 with a start of the schedule that we thought was going to be really brutal for them, and they've come out, you know, this first 16 games sitting at 500. It's really, really been fascinating to see.
Yeah, it has been. And there was a quote that Karl-Anthony Towns gave on Saturday after the loss to Phoenix that really stood out to me. because the Wolves have seen a lot of zone defense against them in recent days, weeks, games, whatever you want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason teams are playing zone against them is because, well, the Wolves are not a great three-point shooting team. But the Wolves also love to shoot three-pointers. And that's not a combination you get often. The Wolves, I believe, are third in three-pointers attempted per game at just under 40. And they are 28th in percentage of those threes that they hit at just over 31. Now, I'm no math wizard, but that's not very good.
No, it's not.
So that's why they've been seeing a ton of zone. It's not because the teams are saying, okay, we're going to make you beat us with three-pointers. It's teams saying, okay, you want to shoot threes? We want you to shoot threes as well. Towns said that he felt they were doing a good job against the zone because they were getting the shots that they wanted, and those shots just did not go in. And he's not lying about that.
Right.
Those are the shots that they want. The Wolves are getting the shots that they want. They're just not making them because they're not a very good three-point shooting team. That's what this comes down to. That's why it's so interesting to see, and Ryan Saunders talked about this preseason and early in the season, that it was going to be a system over personnel philosophy on offense, where they were going to run this system no matter what the personnel was. They were going to have guys that maybe haven't always been good shooters shooting. And that's what it looks like right now, because you've got Travion Graham, who's not a good shooter out there. Josh Okogie also has not yet really figured it out from three-point range in the NBA. Mm-hmm. You've got a bunch of guys like that that are taking a lot of three-pointers and missing a lot of three-pointers. And every time Travion Graham or Josh Okogie or Keelan Martin or Kata Bates-Diop is launching away from three, the other teams are fine with that. That's a win for them, that possession. If it goes down, they're going to shake their hand and move on, but they're okay with it.
So is the only solution to just hope that the Wolves just start making more of these threes? I mean, it just seems like that's – because they're not going to divvy away from this playing style, right? Like, they're going to keep doing this. So you just have to think, if you're a Wolves fan and you're hoping that this team can make the postseason, you just have to hope that the three-point shots just start to fall. You have to hope that, you know, Andrew Wiggins is hitting 33% of his threes right now. You got to hope that maybe he can get that up to 35 or 36% at some point during the season.
Well, and the thing that's most interesting to me about Wiggins is that he's not shooting the ball well off of catch-and-shoot threes, but his off-the-dribble threes have been pretty good. Like, he is shooting career-high percentages on threes off of one dribble or two and three dribbles, but he's shooting only, like, 30% on catch-and-shoot threes, and that's where he's been harmful. Because when he is controlling and getting into his own rhythm, he's fine, but it's when he's catching off of a pass from Towns or a pass from Josh Okogie penetrating the lane, that's when it's not been good for him.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So it's almost like just Andrew just needs to have the ball in his hands more often. At least that's when he's been the most effective, is when he is creating for himself and, you know, at times creating for other people too. And, you know, I look at a guy like Jeff Teague too. I mean, Jeff Teague's shooting 26%, 26.7% from three-point range now. Like, even
and Jeff Teague doesn't want to shoot. Jeff right. Teague's been he has been the one that doesn't shoot. He's been too tentative.
Yeah, it's going to be really fascinating and interesting to see how this sort of thing just shapes up for them, because this is the style they're going to play, and I applaud them for going this route. You know, they're going to have to start hitting these shots at a better rate if they're going to stay in this. It's going to be really interesting to see how this whole thing plays out for them.
And with this being the first time that we've talked since Saturday's game against Phoenix, I did want to get your thoughts on Jordan Bell, because he really got his first legitimate playing time this weekend against Phoenix. I think he played like 17 minutes or so, and it was the most he had played in the game, certainly the most meaningful minutes that he had played so far. And I think Jordan Bell is someone that they can really use in terms of just energy off the bench that hasn't really been tapped into. The team kind of sleptwalked through most of that first half, and then when Jordan Bell entered the game, it seemed like he woke up a little. He woke the team up a little bit.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, you just he's just one of those guys that his numbers are never going to blow you away in the box score. Like, he's, you know, he might fill it up a little bit from a rebounding standpoint. I think he had 8 or 9 rebounds or something on Saturday's game, but You know, outside of that, he's not going to blow you away with the numbers, but he is going to provide that energy and just try and give you something that you may be missing if you're kind of sleepwalking the way the Wolves were in the first half of that game. And I think that's going to be helpful for them. I mean, they're going to need somebody that can provide that for them a little bit. And I don't know if, you know, how much he's going to actually be able to play. I know he's been dealing with some injuries and things like that all season long, but you know, if he can provide some energy for them, I think it's going to be huge for them, because they're going to need it, I think, really long term. If they're going to need some sort of way to keep themselves in games if they're having a bad shooting night, you know, like we've seen them have a couple times this year, like they're going to have to find other ways to do it.
Plenty more of those too.
Yeah, and so they're going to have to, if we're going to see that, they're going to need something else that is going to be able to help them, you know, stay in games. If he's going to be a rebounder, can he come in, and if they're missing a lot of shots, can he get some offensive rebounds and some hustle plays and some putback shots and things like that? That's probably what it's going to take if this team is going to struggle from the outside.
I'm curious if they're going to think about starting him at any point, if they're going to deviate from the starting lineup, especially while Trevion Graham's banged up. I would guess he's able to play tonight in Atlanta. That's just a guess, but I would guess that he's able to play. But he's still banged up with that forearm contusion. Jake Layman continues to be out, and Robert Covington will be back. But maybe you think about starting Jeff Teague, Andrew Wiggins, Covington at the three.
Yeah.
Put Jordan Bell at the four and go Towns at the five and see what you got with that, because Noah Vonleh hasn't necessarily looked very good lately. Gorgie, I think, is a guy that does need to be playing, but I think he's best suited off the bench, and I think most people would agree with me there. But maybe insert Jordan Bell in the starting lineup. See what he looks like next to Towns, because the first time that he and Towns played together was on Saturday afternoon, and I think that that's something that could be good for them moving forward.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And then also, too, I mean, we haven't seen Robert Covington play the three at all this year, and
yeah,
I would be
it's been very rare. I don't know that there have been any minutes with him and two bigs on the floor.
Yeah, and that's something I've been curious to see now. I mean, I know that they've, for the style of play that they want to play, I know they want to sort of play a little bit smaller, having Covington at the four, but it would be a nice dynamic to see him back at the three, which I think is kind of more of his natural position, and see what he can do there and see how he sort of fits into the system that way with, you know, two more sort of bigger guys next to him on the front court. It'll be interesting. It's something I would definitely explore, but we'll see.
Yeah, we will see if they do that. It's something that interests me, though. What are you looking forward to this week? Because with Thanksgiving, the holiday, and just things are hectic on my end too right now, this is probably going to be the only Raised by Wolves, at least that I'm on this week. You and Dane might do one as well. But what are you looking forward to this week? As we kind of, they have an easier schedule where they're in Atlanta, they're in San Antonio on Wednesday night, and then Memphis on Sunday. And it'll be interesting to see how this team handles having 3 days off, because
yeah,
the NBA doesn't play on Thanksgiving, and then the Wolves happen to be off Friday and Saturday too. But what are you looking for against Atlanta, San Antonio, and Memphis?
I think it's can they put together a couple of wins in a row? You know, the Wolves really haven't had, you know, they're at 8-8, and they have kind of been what their record is, in that when you look at it, okay, they won their first three games, they were 3-0. They have only won back-to-back games one time since then. And
yeah,
I'll be curious to see if they can put together a couple of wins in a row here now, as guys start getting healthier and they sort of get back to full strength. They got Atlanta tonight. Can they pull that one out? Atlanta's always been oddly a house of horrors for them for whatever reason, even when the Hawks have been bad.
Which doesn't make sense, because
right,
it's not an intimidating place to
right,
play.
Right, exactly. And maybe that's
no one in Atlanta really cares about sports.
Right. And then, you know, San Antonio's always been a nightmare for, you know, it doesn't matter how they're playing. That's just always been a tough place to play for the Wolves for obvious reasons. But I'll be interested to see how these next couple of games play out for them. If they can put together a couple of games in a row where they play well and find a way to win. And, you know, Memphis, for whatever reason, is always tough, and they always play the Wolves tough. And, you know, they beat the Wolves pretty handily a couple of weeks ago in Memphis. They'll be coming here on Sunday. So, yeah, I'll be curious to see just how these next three games go. Because after that, it's going to get a little bit tougher. They get to play Luka a week from Wednesday after that, and then they're at Oklahoma City, and then they get LeBron and Anthony Davis after that. So it's going to be a tough stretch of games after these next three, and I think it'll be important for them to at least at bare minimum win two out of these next three.
This feels like a real opportunity to bounce back after really what's been a rough stretch, where their only win as of late has been the one on the road in Utah, which was an impressive win, especially without Wiggins. But this feels like an opportunity to kind of right the ship. If they can win these next three and get to 11-8, I think there's reason to feel good about this team. But this is also, it could be a turning point where if they go 1-2 or even only 2-1 and then have that three-game stretch coming up, where this could be the last time this team is 500 this year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking further down into the schedule, Danny. I mean, you've got the Lakers on December 8th, and you're at Phoenix. You know, then you got Utah coming here, and then you got the Clippers, and then you got the Pelicans, and, you know, the Pelicans might have Zion back by then. Then you're at Denver, you're at Portland, and I mean, that's going to be – December is going to be a gauntlet, I think, for them. And if they can finish off November on a good note and at least start out December with some positivity, with a win or something like that, I think they might be able to fight through December a little bit better. But it'll be interesting. They're going to be tested these next couple of weeks. It'll be interesting to see how they respond.
And then last thing before we get out of here, this is the first time that we've talked since the City Edition uniforms were unveiled. What'd you think?
I like them. I'm not a huge, like, baby blue fan, but, you know, I've never minded them on jerseys.
Sure.
And so it was an interesting sort of approach to them, because we've seen so many of the other City Edition jerseys be sort of loud, and, I mean, the Mavericks City Edition jerseys are, like, the neon sort of green with the sort of the funky lettering and things like that. The Wolves sort
Those
of kept
so
it.
Bad.
I know.
Dallas's are so terrible.
I know. And then, you know, so we've seen so many of the other ones be sort of very loud and flamboyant. And the Wolves sort of kept it sleek and simple and basic. And I didn't mind that. I think they're fine.
They kind of went the conservative route this year, I thought, which is fine. I like them. I think they're solid. They're not near the top of my list in terms of City Edition uniforms, but they're certainly not near the bottom. I think that the NBA kind of had a rough year with the City Edition uniforms. There were certainly far more that I didn't like than the ones that I loved.
Yeah, I did see the Miami Heat ones
today.
Oh,
my goodness, those are amazing.
Oh, boy, yeah. I might have to just get myself one just to have one, because they're just incredible.
Miami, Brooklyn, and Denver have the three best City Edition uniforms, in my opinion.
Yeah, Denver's, I like.
Fantastic.
I like Denver's a lot, too, because they sort of went back to their 80s roots, so to speak. I mean, it was a more modern version of it, but they kind of went with that same concept, and yeah, I liked them. They were really cool.
Yeah, Miami's are incredible. That electric blue, it's just, it is fantastic.
Just amazing.
I'm curious what Miami's going to do now, because they've run out of colors to do Vice City with. They've had pink, they've had white, they've had black, and now they've had blue. Where do you go next?
I don't know with that color scheme. I don't know if you can do
much. Do you
more
just start
than
recycling
that?
Them? Because I don't want to see a change. I don't want them to do anything else. I just want more Miami Vice.
Yeah, I know. I would be fine if they just sort of like rotated them now every year. You know what I mean? If they went
or
to...
just change the team name and let those be the permanent colors. I'd be okay with that.
Just call them the Miami Vice the rest of the way.
Or something. I don't know. Something along those lines. But if you change them from the Heat to that, to have that color scheme, I'd be okay. I think it'd be cool. Miami's normal uniforms don't really do much for me. Like, they're okay. They're fine. Whatever. I get it. But their City Editions are so much better.
Oh, they're fantastic. Yeah, I'm totally with you. I don't think you're going to find too many people that would disagree with you on that assessment either.
No, they're awesome, Manny. Terrific.
Yes, indeed.
So this has been Raised by Wolves. That's Manny Hill. You can find him on Twitter at MannyHill84. I'm Danny Cunningham. I'm on Twitter at RealDCunningham. If you want to get in touch with us, feel free to tweet, or you can leave us a review on the podcast. You can find that on the all-new Score North mobile app, available for Apple and Android devices. Or you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. We're there, ScoreNorth.com as well. Be sure to check us out. This might be it for this week. There might be one or two more. I don't know yet, but until next time, we'll talk to you then.